So today is Wednesday, February the 7th already, mm-hmm. 2018, and I'm here with Amy Potts, and we are going to be talking about the Kentucky 225 initiative and the commission and her role and responsibility with that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about what it means to be a Kentuckian and what we can do in the next 225 years. So the first question we have for you is, so what's your job within the Tourism, Arts, and Heritage Cabinet? What do you normally do when it's not a big initiative?
I work for the Kentucky Department of Tourism, and I work in marketing and communications. So what that entails is I work to market and promote our state as a whole and the destinations which travelers would want to visit. I do that more specifically by working with media. I do pitches to media outlets, so I pitch ideas to digital media, to print media, to, you know, all of these lists that you might see now. We say, hey, include this destination or this city. So I have to do a lot of research. It's a lot of fun because I get to go out and meet people throughout the state and hear what they like to go to and how to sell their attractions. And then I also work with the marketing side, which is sort of more the paid side. So when we buy ads, sometimes we get to design them to write the text and the stories that go with them. We also have an agency that does a lot of that. But for anything in-house, I work with that, and I work with the website. Developing content, I do articles, and then more recently helped to launch the new website, so I learned how to do some minor amounts of website development, which is really fascinating, and I loved doing it, kind of the design and the back end and all of that. So,
and how did you get to that position in the cabinet? What were some of your roles before that?
Actually, I had not worked for the state government until I started with the Department of Tourism 2.5 years ago, a little over 2 years ago. Before that, I worked for nonprofits. I worked for Preservation Kentucky, which is the statewide historic preservation advocacy group. And I was really fortunate to work with a grant program through the National Trust for Historic Preservation, the Rural Heritage Development Initiative, and that's how we met. It was mm-hmm. a timed program, but it looked at strategies to help rural communities not only preserve the resources but also become more economically viable. Mm-hmm. And I worked in 8 Kentucky counties for about 8 years, and it was awesome. It was like my favorite job ever, and if grant money were no issue, I would hope to still be doing it. but I got to work with Sarah in the Community Scholars Program, which we found was a really great tool for some of our local community members, because even though we were sort of the built environment preservation, when I would go into communities, one of the things I would always get asked, I'd get asked 2 things. I want to know more about our history and our story, and I want to know about cemeteries. and that sounds bizarre, but people wanted to know about family cemeteries and plots, and obviously you guys are the repository of a lot of great information in the genealogy and past genealogy, so we decided that the Community Scholars Program would be a great program in this area for them to be able to tell those stories, which also goes along with preserving the mm-hmm. buildings. When the buildings have a great story, they go with them. It's the people that preserve the buildings and their stories. But I did that before. I don't even remember my life before that. I'm not that old. I worked with the Kentucky Main Street Program mm-hmm. In Harrodsburg, Kentucky. And I worked with that for a few years as their director, and that was a really awesome, fun job, too. Mm-hmm. So.
All right, you're forgetting your community scholar training.
Oh, yeah, so I worked with Sarah.
Put your hand in your lap because your ring.
Oh, yeah, did it like bang, bang, bang.
And I told you it would be a very comfortable interview.
I'm a hand talker. Yeah. Hello.
I had to take off all my jewelry so that I wouldn't be knocking it against the table.
And if I ever use my hands instead of words, just say, no, you have to put a word with that. I did do community scholars with Sarah, and it was awesome. So as a part of the Community Scholars in the RHGI, I participated because I was going to be there anyway, so why not? Because I love that stuff. So I did learn some basic oral history techniques it was really awesome, actually. So, and I can't, I'm thinking back on, which, and I won't get emotional, I might get a little emotional. So my sweet, wonderful grandmother passed away last week. She was 92, and I did oral histories with her from what I learned from community scholars.
Yep.
So I didn't even put that together till right now.
So you got your voice, her voice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I can't tell you how precious that is, because she had dementia, and as most people who grow to be that age can get, and for the last 2 years she's been not really communicative, and so it's been very wonderful, especially for my mother, who's an only child, and we could share these stories. And she was a, she was a subsistence farmer in Henry County. That's what she grew up doing. So I really wanted to hear that story, because mm-hmm. we've gotten so far away from that. I can't make anything that's not out of a box with specific instructions. And, you know, I mean, like, and we told the story at her funeral, like, her and her brothers and sisters could, you could put them on a deserted island and they wouldn't just survive. They would make you a gourmet meal and build, like, a four-story tree house with running water. And they were true engineers, not through training, but just through their training and their upbringing, not in any kind of formal education. So, I love that. And so I got a lot of great stories from her about what it was to grow up on a farm in Henry County, Kentucky, and how they grew almost everything that they made. They went to the store for flour and sugar, you know, in the 20s and 30s, and they made all their own clothes, and they lived a rich, rich, wonderful life, and they grew tobacco and raised hogs and all that stuff. But I mean, personally, I got that story out of my training, but I saw that the other community scholars got really great stories. They did some quilting traditions. They did some other kinds of projects like that. So
we're interviewing specifically about the Kentucky 225 initiative, and while I sort of was on the periphery of this and I had mm-hmm. coworkers that were working on it, from your perspective, how did all of this get started, and how did you end up getting involved in your position?
The formal answer to this is the legislature developed a commission. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that most people knew about it until it was upon us in January of 2017.
Because it happened between two gubernatorial administrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So there was this talk that there was this commission formed. So we Googled it. The LRC. I did personally. I'm sure other people knew more and mm-hmm. were told about it. So the commissioner of the Department of Tourism, Kristen Branscombe, was notified that she would kind of be heading up this commission. And so she decided that there were some really interactive ways through the tourism department that we could help tell that story and weave it into our overall marketing, and then also pull together the partners such as Kent Whitworth with the Historical Society, who also had these really great ideas about outreach and engagement. And so the commission came together in January of 2017 to meet and kind of brainstorm these ideas. And there were a lot of partners at the table. There were those that were brought together through the commission, and I think it was most of the Tourism, Arts, and Heritage Cabinet had a representative there, the agencies. But then they also brought in outside voices. I think the Frankfurt Chamber of Commerce, the Frankfurt Tourist Commission, the Distillers Association, and a couple of the distillers. And just to kind of talk about how they could tell the history of the 225 years and then get some engagement about what would you like to see the next 225 years. Knowing that this was not, it's not like the bicentennial or, you know, the sesquicentennial. I mean, it's 225 is neat, but it's not 250 or 100 even, like we turned in this 1992 is 150, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah. So, you know, so they knew that it wasn't going to be like a year-long celebration, but how could we still bring some reverence to this great event? And that was and it was unfunded, so yeah. There was no money behind it from the state. So it was all about coming together and leveraging mm-hmm. what our individual agencies could do.
Was it your agency that determined or commissioned the logo, the brand and the
yes.
logo? And what was who did that?
Commissioner Branscombe mm-hmm. was the main force behind that, mm-hmm. and she worked with a person that she knew that did design.
Okay.
She did a true kind of branding, very mini branding. You know, she talked to the commission, what would you like to see, go into that, and then took it to her person that then came out with the design, and then the commission voted on it. And there were several, I can probably send you for for the files, the different variations and what they chose.
What didn't get chosen, that's what I wanted to know.
And they looked at, I mean, from a basic marketing standpoint, they looked at what would reproduce well. What would you, could you put on a pen? What would look good on maybe a bourbon bottle? What would look good on a t-shirt? Or, you know, at that point in time, early in the talks of the commission, we didn't know how much marketing materials would come out. So they wanted to get something that would have, that would kind of have that clean look, but also very much say 225, which it did.
And you were responsible for, what was your particular part in the initiative?
I was mostly the kind of administrative arm from our agency. As our commissioner was the chair, I helped her put together the agendas, the meeting minutes. I took minutes when I was there, any materials she might need for that, for the commission. And then I attended the meetings. And then as the events became closer, I took a more active role in helping plan events that our agency was responsible, worked with others who were interested in either logo, getting the logo, or that, what can we call it? It's not a banner, but the backdrop.
Pop-up backdrop.
Pop-up banner. That's what it is, actually. It's a pop-up banner, which is huge, by the way. It was really fun to install. And then, too, also, we did a website. And so my role there was to put in all the content into the website.
First, can you name some of the events that different agencies within the cabinet hosted? And then after that, can you tell us a little bit about some communities that sort of, how did you get the, we'll do one question at a time. Just tell us about the ones that Tourism, Arts, and Heritage were engaged with. Some examples, you have to be.
The Kentucky Artisan Center in Berea, they did a, and I might get this wrong, but they did an exhibit, and it was a, they commissioned, not commissioned, but they did a call for entries about to reflect 225, and they had that exhibit up for a while. They also had a sand art sculpture come in and did some beautiful, beautiful sand art of 225, and it was there that weekend and then gone. That was really cool. The Kentucky Arts Council, I don't know the details, but they did, I think they did an actual call for entries, too, for art submissions. Heritage Council didn't really do anything. You guys, of course. The Historical Society really took the ball and ran with it. They did these awesome listening tours across the state to ask these questions, what it is to be Kentuckian, where do you want to see us go. They did that outreach. They wrapped their building in a beautiful 225 banner. Did an exhibit, and then also did an actual celebration on that day with birthday cake, and it was open to the community for free, the building, the History Center. I'm probably leaving off some. I know the Horse Park, I think they did a few things. KET, also, they were on the commission. KET is not a part of our cabinet, but the Kentucky Educational Television did some shots. They did some film footage down here at the old Capitol, interviewed. I know Commissioner Ranscombe and some other people probably can't. And I know that aired on KET as well. And I think Kentucky Life might have done a segment on it, too. That's not inclusive, but that's a good sampling of kind of some of the ways people celebrated.
And then how did you get the word out to the communities to submit ideas? Did you encourage them to plan things or to simply, you know, what are you doing in 2017? Tell us, and we'll, you know, what was the message that you sent them, and how did you get them to respond?
We did a press release pretty early in 2017 through our agency that just went out to across the state to local small papers and radio and everywhere we could get it, just saying we have this website. Contact us if you want to be featured on it, or if you want to use our pop-up banner, or if you need the logo, or what are you planning to do. So it was more just share your information with us. It wasn't, we didn't coach or prod a lot, you know, it was just out there. And we didn't really, I mean, as after that, we did a social media push through our channels, but, you know, people really came to us after that. I mean, and then, I mean, sure, there are probably people that didn't know about it, but the ones that did hear or were curious really did contact and approach us.
Were there some shining stars? Were there some communities that really took that and ran with it and did something?
Danville, Kentucky, they really stepped up, and of course they are the home of where the Kentucky Constitution was written, and so this was very poignant, I mean very meaningful that they had a celebration. So they had kind of a community watch, they had music, it was actually on June 1st, they had a speaker and a couple speakers, and kind of a community-wide proclamation. So Danville was kind of first out of that, but also Barktown was very interested in being involved, and they stepped up with their, excuse me, with their distilleries, and did a couple of events. There were an event there that evening. And I would say, to me, those were the shining stars. People did really try to work it in. I know one thing I loved, it isn't so much an event, but it was in Horse Cave. Right outside of Mammoth Cave National Park, and they, and I can find a picture of this for you, but they set up a selfie station, and it was like a picture frame with the 225 and a birthday cake, and people could stand behind it and then post it to their social media platforms and share Horse Cave's information. And we had a hashtag KY225, and we were very good about monitoring that and sharing it. Murray, Kentucky was, from a social media engagement standpoint, did a fantastic job. They had a bucket list. They had a Kentucky bucket list, and it was their own. It was a Murray-centric bucket list, but on our website, ky225.com, we had a Kentucky bucket list. And I put on 225 things, and there was something from every single county. So obviously some counties have a few more. And they were your iconic experiences, like Mammoth Cave, Cumberland Falls, but then off the beaten path kind of things, and historic reenactments, events. And so we tried to weave in the history and also some of the more modern amenities that people come to visit.
I guess it's only fair that we ask you the questions that we ask during our 225 engagement tours. And the first one is, to you, what makes Kentucky, Kentucky?
Oh, Kentucky.
And you can even take it from a specific standpoint, like historic preservation or
Well,
food.
For me, Kentucky, okay, I'm going to probably ramble because
that's okay.
What I do.
So I've got 5 hours of media.
Good, because I don't really want to go back. Can you edit that out? Okay, to begin, simply put, Kentucky, what makes Kentucky, Kentucky me is it's just home. It's home. So this is the home I know. And I have briefly left, and I've always wanted to come back. And that kind of trite statement, you know, never met a Kentuckian that wasn't coming home, I have just really found that to be true. I mean, I talked about it incessantly when I didn't live in the state. I wanted to be, there's a true passion and love by people that are Kentuckians and those that are adopted Kentuckians. The people that have come here and just made it home and love it. There's just a fierce loyalty, right? And that's Kentucky. And a fierce loyalty, warts and all. So even the parts that aren't the most lovable, you love and you defend, because this is my state, and you better not bad talk me, especially if you're from Lake Tennessee or North Carolina. But you know, it's that passion of what makes Kentucky Kentucky. I think I'm gonna be really.
Well, what are the parts that are lovable though?
Oh, so many. So this is gonna go on forever, and it'll get really cheesy.
Okay.
People, first and foremost. I mean, I've been in the state I've lived in the state my whole life. I've worked in the state almost my whole professional life.
Where were you born?
Frankfort Regional.
Mm-hmm.
When it was brand new. How old I am. But we moved when I was 3 and we lived in Henry County. Mm-hmm. And then I lived in Berea for a very long time, and then I lived in Harrisburg for a really long time, and now I'm back. It's like full circle. Except I hope I'm not circling out. But
I hope the circle's not closing.
Not closing, no. But the people. So, right. I mean, it's true what everybody says and what you hear. I have been all around, and people are genuinely kind and nice. Very kind. Talkative, like me. There's stories. There's so many stories they want to share, and I'm a person that likes to hear it and tell my own. So, as you guys have witnessed. But, so that people, first and foremost, make Kentucky, Kentucky, and that's what I love, and I think makes us level. I love the geography of the state, and we were just talking about that. I mean, where else do you live that in 5 hours, maybe it's a little farther to drive hard from Paducah to Pikeville, you can go from rolling open riverside country, like the Mississippi and the Ohio rivers, where the banks are wide and there's barges, and you go through all these amazing cornfields, and then it just starts to get hillier, and then there's this gorgeous bluegrass country, and then you get into the most beautiful mountains. I'm biased, but I think the most beautiful mountains in the Appalachians and Cumberland, whatever. So I mean, that's just really, I think, a special trait of Kentucky, is that from tip to tip you have all these great geographic features, natural beauty. Large lakes, you know, these rocks that are arches. So I love that. So the people, the beauty, the culture. I mean, I really like that we're kind of Southern, but we're kind of not. And all that means, like, if you're going to share this, like, I watched the UK game last night.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk about culture, Kentucky culture? You just look, like, I've got a great picture on my phone. I'll show you before I leave, about two dejected fans sitting. That's the camera got. And it's just, you, like, it is Kentucky culture, right? So, but there's something about that that I love. I mean, I love the different, and there's distinct regions. Like, Northern Kentucky, the culture there is different. It's different than what you're going to find down in Corbin or over in Pikeville. And I grew up in Northern Kentucky, really, on the river in Henry County. And when I was 14, we moved to Berea, and it was different. Not bad, not better, just different. Like, people talk different. There were different cultural traditions. Church was different. I mean, it was just different, right? And so, like, and I love that, you know, that I was 2 hours away, and I could see these differences. So I think people place natural beauty, culture. I mean, Kentucky's got everything. We're like, why would you want to live anywhere else except for... I mean, I have some thoughts about that, too, but...
What do you... I'm thinking about your job in doing marketing and PR for the state and trying to sell that. What are some of the ways or the strategies that you've used those assets to get us on lists or get us in publications that... You know, how do you explain to an outsider why Kentucky mm-hmm. is, in fact, the best?
Well, from just a basic tourism marketing strategy, you go for your market, which we are a drive state. So, you know, you hear this all the time. We are within 500 mile, I should know this trip, if you know, like 3/4 of the country population. Mm-hmm. So we really focus on the areas where somebody could come and take a weekend trip. So for a long time, our big marketing push was no weekend plans, try some of ours. And then I would go into, you know, you could rappel at Red River Gorge, or, you know, these kind of day trip ideas that I think are a real asset of Kentucky, because we're affordable, we're very reachable by a large market. We have a lot of great cultural opportunities. So we have pillars that we market to this, and they are like music, horses, of course, bourbon, culinary, and I'll get more into that mm-hmm. later, outdoor adventure, music and art, I might have said that, and history and heritage. So we would just kind of tailor different packages around those. Because obviously, and I try really hard when I'm in my job to look at, like, if I were from Idaho and I just had a perception of Kentucky, I'd never been here, I just knew what I'd heard, just like I have of Idaho, what would I think about? And I think about horses. Maybe now in the last 10 years I'd really think about bourbon. You know, and so I try to start with that and not just make it. But the truth is, and we get this a lot, as a state agency that's representing the whole state, it's not all horses, right? I mean, you know, and that kind of idyllic horse farm in Lexington. But it is what somebody would come here to visit, and then they can discover all the amazing things. So we work with that. I'm obviously a history geek, so that's my background. So when I came to the department, we have a cultural heritage director, but I really worked with her to try to pull out that charm. And something that I hear a lot from visitors in our state are small towns. They're very interested in coming and seeing. They want they want scenic drives, and they want small, quaint main streets where they can have authentic experiences. So the chain restaurants and hotels are great for some, and that's great for some kinds of trips. But sometimes people want the little restaurant on Main Street where you're going to run into a local and you're going to get like a really amazing omelet and you're going to hear some stories and then you're going to go stay in an Airbnb or, you know, I mean, you're going to kind of have this more local experience. Mm-hmm. People want that. In Kentucky, that's like an easy sell because we've gotten those everywhere. So one of our big initiatives, we do the No Weekend Plans, but what we're shifting to this year and beyond is culinary. Other states have had a lot of success, like Louisiana, and you think about Louisiana and you immediately think, you know, grits and crawfish and shrimp. And, you know, I mean, you think of that, like, rich kind of jambalaya. And so we haven't really ever done that here. So what Commissioner Branscom wanted to do is really highlight all of the different culinary things you can do in Kentucky, which I think starts with the farm fresh, farm-to-table movement, because we have all these wonderful restaurants now that are embracing that are buying locally, that are kind of serving some interesting cuisine. We've got some up-and-coming world-renowned chefs in places like Louisville and Lexington and Paducah. And so we're really just trying to celebrate that. And what we've done is we break the state into 9 tourism regions, which doesn't mean much to a traveler, but we have to get a grasp on it, you know. So each of the regions submitted a regional meal. They had to come together and decide what their regional meal would be, which was took a long time. So there's a lot of catfish. But they did have to pick like a main dish, a dessert, a drink, a side that reflected their region. So like you have farm-raised beef in Central Kentucky because we're one of the biggest beef producers in the country. And beer cheese is an appetizer because that originated in Winchester in an L8. You wash it all down with an L8. You know, and so, I mean, and so each, what I think Kristen, Commissioner Branscom really wanted to get at was that these all had stories. And so how can we tell the story of the place through the foodways and the traditions that are associated with that? And engage locals, too, to visit places within their state. So it's just starting the year of culinary, but we're very excited. We're just kind of rolling it out. There'll be recipes and other things. A big thing that we're doing now is the James Beard Awards in New York are going to feature 2 Kentucky chefs. And it's like at the end of this month. And Chef Wida Michaels in Midway. And Chef Sarah Bradley in Paducah, the Bright House, who's doing some really innovative things with Kentucky's blue snapper, which is actually Asian carp, which has to be, you know, needs to be gotten out of the waters. And I mean, a lot of people are like, ew, but I tried it and it was fantastic. And she was from Paducah, left and studied in Chicago and New York, and came back and opened this restaurant. Have you eaten there? It is fantastic.
She made pimento cheese grits with, I digress. You should not hear this much of me, but I have to tell you. Pimento cheese grits with pork belly on the top of it, and it was the best thing I've ever eaten in my life. And she's very good at recycling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, today's fresh Brussels sprouts or tomorrow's Brussels sprout coleslaw, that type of thing.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, she's... Mm-hmm. So
there's actually video footage of me getting very excited about eating.
You want to see this?
Okay.
I love that place.
It's actually Nick Kovalt from GSA who's getting very excited, but I'm right next to him.
Well, and you know, and there are these places everywhere. I mean, you know, Pikeville, Blue Raven is doing some fantastic things there. And so it's what a tourist or a traveler now wants. They want to get really excited about some yummy pork belly. You know what I mean? Like, they don't want to just have it.
Authentic food with a story.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So anyway, that was probably a really long answer to that question, but that's how we sort of market the site, working from those pillars, the icons that everybody knows mm-hmm. about, to how we get at those stories.
Okay. So let's talk about the warts a little bit. So what are some things that make Kentucky, Kentucky that are challenging?
Perception. Bad, bad perception. You know, we have a little bit of a bad, what am I looking for? Maybe people from the outside see us as backward, a little uneducated, which is such a glossed over way of dismissing, you know, a group or a people. I think that's a wart. I mean, I think whether it's true or not, that perception is out there. And that's hard. I mean, that's hard to overcome in any type of industry and business you do, but it's hard to overcome in the tourism industry. Making people realize that they're wrong. I love to do. So from a child, I like to win the argument. So there's that. I think, we obviously have some major social issues. We have unforgivable poverty. Like, there's just, it's unforgivable that we have the kind of poverty that we have. That we probably have some of the wealthiest counties in the country and some of the poorest counties in the country within 180 miles of each other. Like, that's unforgivable to me. But it's also very complex and difficult. It's not like it's like there's any easy fix. There's that. I think those are probably the biggest warts, kind of the... there's an ebb and flow. I mean, right now, of course, it's horrific, the opioid addiction. I think that's I know nothing about it, but fortunately, I don't. But I think it's just a symptom of a greater problem, of a hopelessness, of a... and that's, to me, again, unforgivable, because we have this amazing state, and... But it's really hard when you're in certain places, and every day is a struggle for immediate things like self-worth and food, you know, and you're in a cycle of it, then, obviously escapism is attractive. And so those are all super complex warts, like deep, deep growing ones that smarter people than I have struggled with for generations and generations. But I don't want those things to define the people that surround them, you know, because there's so much more than that, than just, you know, the poorest county in the nation, and, you know, it's very real to them, but yeah, that's a wart, and it's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see, or where would you like to see Kentucky in 225 years from now? Let's take it sooner, because that's hard to imagine.
I'm like, do the math. What year is it?
I know.
We're all on hoverboards.
Yeah, ideally.
Cryogenically, I'm still alive. I don't want to be. No, I don't want to be. No.
Let's just say 20 years.
Okay. So I can do that. Because I think, you know, I got young kids, so I mm-hmm. think a lot about it. Because I think, what do I want? What do I want their Kentucky story to be mm-hmm. in there? Whether they choose to stay here or not. And if they don't, that's fine, too. 20 years would be... I still won't be retired. that's a great question, Sarah, because it's really... It's funny, I feel like I'm guilty of living in the future too much, but I don't really think about it like that. So, like, I don't have a great initial response. But... let's see. Some of the things. Well, obviously progress on some of the warts that we talked about. We'd love to see that. Would love to see U of L basketball great again.
It's a very Kentucky answer.
But not, because, like, if my husband heard that, he'd be like, what? UK. And he's from Ohio, so I just want to...
It's a mixed marriage.
It is. It is. I know. Always the joke was, you know, not even funny. I love him anyway. but he's so funny because he moved here 15 years ago, and he will never go back. He loves it, and his parents moved here to be with us from Ohio. Although his mother was one of the diaspora, is that the word? Like, her parents left Paintsville to move to Springfield, Ohio, to work at International Harvester. Her father did, and that's where she was born. And her sister, and they were raised there, but they weren't brought home. They weren't brought back a lot. A lot of people, you know, did that trip every weekend. They didn't. But her father always like had one foot in Kentucky. You know what I mean? Like the stories that I want to get back to the home place. So it was powerful for her to come back. That's not the question you asked me. Where do I want to see it in 20 years?
Well, that's an important part of our culture, though mm-hmm. are people retiring and coming here, and also mm-hmm. that diaspora you're talking about, folks leaving the region to go get work in Ohio specifically, mm-hmm. and then coming back.
Who's going to hear this? Can I get real political? It's going to be filed away. I won't get, like, dangerous. I would like to see greater emphasis put on education. So in 20 years. I think we can do it. I think together we can do it. I think that... although 20 years isn't that long, we'll say 50, I would like to see greater access to higher education, to training programs, and meaningful lifelong learning. You know, I mean, I would just like to see that, and I know there's lots of great people working towards that. And I'd like to see it in our elementary and middle grades and high school. I personally feel like we have very dedicated educators. I mean, I do feel like we are light years ahead of where we were when I was in school. I mean, I'm old now. But I was in school before the Educational Reform Act. I mean, it passed like when I was in high school. And so, or was instituted when I was in high school. So I do think that I think it's easy to look and say there's so much to do that it's overwhelming. I think we've come a long way, you know. So that's I think in 50 years, if we really kind of worked out some of our issues with educational opportunities, that would be fantastic. Jobs, I mean, be great. I see, it must be horrible to just not find decent paying work. You know, I like would love for people to have a living wage, not have to work 8 jobs to pay. I mean, we have a really super low cost of living in Kentucky for the most part, most places. I mean, obviously there's some like Frankfurt, weird, that are like exorbitantly greater than other areas in the state, but I think, you know, a good living wage and good jobs for everybody, it's not too much to ask, mm-hmm. is it? Love to see us healthier. That's probably a war too. We're pretty unhealthy on a lot of levels, like physically, mentally, emotionally. Like, it'd be great if we could see some of these initiatives working to make Kentucky healthier people. And I'd like to, for the most part, see some of the good stuff we're doing keep going and getting better. I mean, I love the local movement. I love that we are, from a personal standpoint, I'm just love that it seems like it's taking hold, kind of a shop local and a support local, which is great for Kentucky entrepreneurs and business owners and farmers. You know, I would love to see that be even greater. Like, I say all the time, when I started with the RHGI, the Bourbon Trail really just started. And when I would bring in all my people to do our Dog and Pony around the region, we could go to Makers, and Buffalo Trace wasn't in my region, so we couldn't go there, but they're really at Four Roses in Wild Turkey, and that was then. People loved it, but then I, like, blink, take a nap, have 2 babies, and look up, and, like, now everybody's bourbon crazy. Like, so if that can happen in 15 years, then imagine where we could be with some of our other positive initiatives. Mm-hmm. Love to see that. Want to see the History Center still here? Heritage Council.
I think the mm-hmm. History Center will necessarily have to be here. Now, what's inside?
That's where I get a pit in my stomach. And I would love to see people appreciate their history more. You know, I think... and it's not that they don't. I mean, I think a great number of people do. And I'm real guilty about only hearing the negative. And you know how it is. People will spew the negative, but they hardly tell you when they're pleased with you. And I'm probably guilty of that, too. So I do think that people do appreciate our history, but I would love to see it just continue to grow. Mm-hmm. And you all have great outreach here at History. And we, as a parent, I'm particularly appreciative, and I'm very grateful that I live in a city where you're headquartered, because we do the Saturday programs, we do the camps in the summer, and it's going to teach my boys a way to look at our state and the importance of history in a fun way that I probably can't. So.
I think that's all the formal questions that we have. And just, do you have anything that you'd like to add about
I think it was a really good, I mean, I really think it was a positive and good initiative. I think for a couple of reasons that it brought some partners to the table in a way that I don't, I'm newer again to state government, but I don't see it maybe in the way that we used to all work together 15 years ago. And I don't think that's purposeful. I think it's just we're busy. And I know that the agency heads all get together monthly or whatever, but I think, you know, sometimes it's really great to just sit down with your peers and say what's going on, what's going down, get ideas from each other. So for me, that was one of the best things. It was great to see the people out in the state. Selfishly, I just loved doing the research because, like, I got to actually have to. It was interesting and fun to find something from every county. Like, I feel like it was like a little challenge I gave myself. And for the most part, it was never difficult. There were some, I mean, from a tourism standpoint, there were some that were a little more challenging, but that was cool. I learned a lot. So I just think all in all, it was a super positive thing that was done basically with no funding. So
okay.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Letting me talk.
Yeah, thanks.
I obviously enjoyed that.
Thanks for being our first interview.
Uh-huh.